Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:05, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And this week, we saw stock markets rally, and particularly Wall Street, for four consecutive days from Tuesday. So then the short-term overbought condition that was evident last week is even more evident this week. And perhaps more importantly, the S&P is back above 2000. In fact, it's closing out the week around 2050, and in positive territory for the year so far, and that's perhaps the first time practically this year that it's been in positive territory. And the Dow Jones is also in positive territory, whereas the Nasdaq isn't quite yet. And the majority of European stock markets are still in negative territory, but they've all experienced pretty impressive rebounds, and they're now, by and large, testing the region of their respective 200-day moving averages. So this really is the do-or-die moment. And for the S&P, then it is back above its 200-day moving average and is overbought in the short term and has had this very impressive rebound, but is swiftly approaching the most recent of the lower reaction highs, which is in the region of 2100. And it wouldn't be at all surprising if we get some form of consolidation, and something that, and it would be the most common chart pattern that we have right now, is that a large number of shares, and particularly those in the commodity sector and in the energy sector, have had experienced very deep pullbacks and have surged over the last month to close their overextensions relative to the trend mean, and some have pushed above it and some are still below it, but a process of mean reversion has certainly been evident. Then what do we expect to happen next is the question. And generally speaking, what you expect is that a short-term oversold condition is replaced by a short-term overbought condition, and that you get some form of consolidation. And in some cases, that consolidation will go all the way back down and test the low. In other cases, then you will get some consolidation in the region of the moving average, and in the very best case, you will get a consolidation above the trend mean. And we just don't know yet exactly where that's most likely to occur. But what we definitely have is a continued rebound in the commodity sector. Now, they were ever so slightly weaker in here today, and certainly not in a dynamic fashion. But the continuous commodity index, which is unweighted and many regarded as the old CRB, then that's unwound its oversold condition relative to the MA. And when you look at major commodities like oil, which and Brent crude is closing out the day above $41. WTI is slightly below 40, but relative to where their lows were, this has been a really quite an impressive rally in the order of between 25% and 30%. Then copper is right now around $2.25, and that's right in the region of the trend mean, and it's unwound its oversold condition. So what happens next is going to say a lot for the commodity sector, and certainly it got some assistance this week from the relative weakness of the US dollar. The dollar index has been ranging below the psychological 100 level for much of the last 7 or 8 months, and has pulled back again from that level on a more dovish way of talking from the Federal Reserve. This was a big week for central banks, and the Fed basically said that they're going to remain very accommodative. They're not going to be in a hurry to raise rates, but that slowly but surely they are going to be doing that, and everything is going to depend on how they measure inflation. But when you look at what's happening with commodity prices, then when we roll through to the end of this quarter and we compare where commodity prices were at the end of last year, then there is going to be a significant difference. And that is going to start to change the way that well, in very simple terms, if the fall in commodity prices was considered to be deflationary, surely the rebound has got to be inflationary. And then that's going to start moving the needle. But then that's the end of this quarter, and the majority of those indices that measure inflation are updated with a quarterly lag, which means that they won't be updated again until the end of June. So central banks aren't in any hurry, and particularly the Fed, because the Fed can't raise interest rates aggressively all on its own. It has to give the market time to get used to it, or the dollar would go to the moon, and that would have a deleterious effect on their primary objective, which is to promote economic growth in the USA. So they have to go slowly. They simply have no choice. But while the Fed is grappling with this question about how to begin to raise interest rates and get further away from the zero bound, and they're only at about 0.5% right now, then the ECB isn't likely to move from the zero bound for a considerable period. And it's interesting today, that Mario Draghi took politicians to task for not doing more in terms of fiscal reform. He was basically saying that the ECB simply can't do it all on its own. But the ECB has really only got one core mandate, and that is to achieve an inflation target of 2%. And despite the fact that he is chastising European governments for not doing enough in terms of reform, the reality is that there's simply no appetite among the European electorate and European politicians to push for the kind of cohesive reforms that would really support the euro. And there has to then be, you have to break down, I think, when you think about Europe and the euro, is what is good for the euro needn't necessarily be positive for individual countries. And what's negative for individual countries may or may not be overly influenced by what happens with the euro. And of course, and none of that has a great bearing on what's good for individual companies. And in the stock market, you buy companies. You don't buy countries. You buy countries in the government bond market, certainly. And they are all benefiting right now from the fact that the ECB is willing to buy whatever anyone wants to pledge as collateral with it, that they're going to be printing 90 billion euros a month for the foreseeable future. And Japan is also engaged in a very accommodative period. So if it was 125 billion being printed before this week, well, as of this week, it's going to be 155 billion printed once a month by both the BOJ and the ECB. And that's a lot of liquidity. And a lot of it is going to go into government bonds. But and that was the case with the Fed in 2011 as well. But and if you go back and look at what did the stock market in the US look like in 2011 after the end of QE and the beginning of QE3, then it took some time for stock market investors to get the message. But printing that kind of money has a transformative effect of just pumping large amounts of liquidity. And some of the assistance that is going to be given to the banking sector is also important because they simply can't lend right now. And they're being penalized for sourcing tier one capital from the ECB. So the changes that have been implemented really are quite important because it takes some of the shackles off of the European banking sector. But without the kind of reforms on the fiscal front that could reignite growth, then what it probably does is remove the possibility that we're going to have an additional banking crisis, but it's hardly going to be a growth sector going forward. But with the amount of liquidity that we're going to be pushing into the system, then that should generally help to inflate asset prices. And the two key assets that quantitative easing tends to inflate are, well, three really, are property, government bonds, and stocks. Well, property is recovering. Government bonds are already very expensive. So stocks and property are perhaps the biggest sectors that are likely to benefit. And that's going to play out over time. Well, the dollar's weakness has taken, or at least sapped, some of the interest for European equities in the very short term, and the chances are that we're going to get a little bit of consolidation. But with the ECB printing the way it is, it's unlikely that we're going to see those indices take out their respective lows, and that any kind of meaningful pullback, at least back towards their recent lows, are, and we can probably expect them to find support above them, it can be considered a buying opportunity, I suspect, from some of for those European indices. And when we look out into Asia, then the Hang Seng has continued to rally here, and the Chinese market is still very depressed, and it's relatively inert relative to just how volatile it was this time last year. And by and large, that can be considered to be good news, and the A shares are slowly but surely starting to rally here. So that at least removes some of the uncertainty that we're, that the Chinese market is being managed ever so slightly higher, and the at the renminbi it has been less volatile of late. Now, by and large, if you look beyond China, and I'll talk a little bit about Japan in a moment, but if you look beyond China and look at the rest of Asia, and particularly the ASEAN region, then the majority of those countries had experienced really quite abrupt currency weakness. And with the dollar now weakening, it's had a transformative effect on some of those ASEAN currencies. So the Indonesian rupiah has firmed through its 200-day moving average. The Malaysian ringgit has also firmed up, and so has the Korean won, the Taiwan dollar, the Philippine peso. And that's beginning to transform some of those stock markets, because in nominal terms they had been mostly ranging, but because of the weakness of their currencies in US dollar terms or in the terms of foreign investors, then they had been trending lower. And the relative strength of their currencies right now is acting as a tailwind for foreign investors, and those markets are no longer nearly as expensive as they would have been before this this period. And in some cases, that's a four-year downtrend that's beginning to be broken in some of those currencies. So then sentiment towards emerging markets is far from benign. In fact, it's pretty ambivalent right now, not least because those currencies have been going down for so long, and yet what we're now seeing is that they are outperforming, and that could well be the one of the defining characteristics of this year, that we get a rebound in emerging markets. And that would be particularly the case if the rally in commodities continues. Well, the CCI is in the region of the moving average, but gold prices are currently around $1,250 and have been consolidating above their 200-day moving average. And that's for the first time in at least a year and a half. And silver prices are easing a little bit in here today and pulling back from the $16 area, but back above the 200-day MA now for the first time in really quite some time. Then coffee has broken its progression of lower rally highs. Sugar is breaking out from a first step above a type 2 base. Then soybeans has been largely range bound below 900 cents for the last 7 months. And that's really very inert for a commodity that is so often really quite volatile. And it suggests that there's a war going on between supply and demand. And when we do get a breakout, that it's likely to take a lot of market participants by surprise. Cotton, which has been trending lower and hit, I think it's 7 or 8 year lows just last week, is rebounding and now back in backwardation. And lumber prices have been limit up for most of the days this week and have broken the medium-term progression of lower rally highs. So certainly it's time to assess individual commodities on their individual characteristics. But by and large, this is increasingly looking like a medium-term low for the cycle. And for commodity producing countries, then that's very good news. So the Australian dollar has completed what is increasingly looking like a base formation and is closing out at 76 cents even in here today. And if the Australian dollar is breaking out, then the New Zealand dollar is unlikely to be far behind. The New Zealand stock market has been on a tear and is really quite overbought in the short term. And a breakout in the currency moving higher could potentially be the catalyst that would begin to take some of the impetus out of what has been just an incredibly impressive rally for New Zealand stocks. But it is looking increasingly likely that it is the New Zealand dollar will break out next. And when you look at other commodity currencies, then the South African rand has strengthened up and at least is unwinding its oversold condition. But that was an accelerated decline that we saw all the way down to the lows at the end of the year, of last year. So when a currency has been going down for so long, it becomes a problem for central banks. It becomes a problem for governments, and they have to step in. And they have to do something to help to stabilize it. That's certainly what happened with the rupiah in Indonesia back in September. Well, the Mexican peso is beginning to strengthen up. So in nominal terms, the index has been going sideways for 3 years. But if you look at the EWW, I think that's the iShares Mexico index, it's been trending down for the last 3 years because of the weakness of the currency. And that has now broken its progression of lower rally highs. And the Brazilian real has strengthened through its 200-day moving average. And the prospect of an impeachment of Dilma Rousseff is growing progressively better. I was actually getting quite enthused about Brazil before the last election because I was hoping that she wasn't going to win. And of course she did win. So the stock market went down and has kept going down since the election, but has now started to regain some impetus again because it's looking increasingly likely that she will not be able to bring Lula da Silva into the cabinet. And you know, one way of looking at it is, Lula, you know, being an ex-president could have, and a very well-liked ex-president could have brought some stability. But of course, it would also have sheltered him from litigation. And that's now looking increasingly less likely. So there is a greater possibility that Rousseff could be pulled into any litigation that Lula da Silva is being brought into. And Eduardo Cunha, who is more market friendly, is likely to be the next president if an impeachment goes through, and we'll find that out in the next 6 weeks. And that's beginning to be priced into the stock market. So there's a lot of things happening out there, and not least because we've had this very deep pullback and a transition that certainly there is a distinction to be made between currencies that had trended lower for over 4 years and are beginning to find support relative to stock markets, which have been going up for 7 years and have really just had their biggest pullback in at least the last 4 years. So we're still in this ranging environment, and we have a short-term overbought condition, and the stock market is pushing back up towards an area of previous resistance, which for the S&P is around 2100. So we can anticipate that there is going to be some form of consolidation. And then the question is just how big is that likely to be? Well, that's right now we don't have an answer to that question. What we do know is that the liquidity is still abundant, and particularly from the purveyors of that liquidity have changed. So the likely beneficiaries are likely to be more like Europeans than the US at the present moment. And valuations improved at the low, but we've hardly had a quarter between the low and the recent peaks. So then valuations are probably back to where they were at the peak that we saw last year. And I continue to think that we're more likely to range than we are to trend higher to new all-time highs for the broader indices. What we've definitely had is a transition in terms of the performance of stocks and generally speaking, and we'll have greater confirmation of this if the continuous commodity index in fact does break back above the 200-day moving average, and we do get an additional rally in the resources sector. But by and large, in it's worth considering that the market has been rallying since 2009, and we're now in 2016. And in terms of market cycles, when you get a very depressed resources and energy sector becoming one of the best performing sectors in the market so far this year and taking over leadership, that's generally speaking a signal that we're in the latter stages of an economic expansion. That's generally when inflationary pressures that have been moderate begin to improve or begin to increase. And it's where we would anticipate that economic growth is beginning to do a bit better and consumption of commodities goes up. So, and it's generally in an environment where supply has been deteriorating. So, then commodities do a bit better. And often and the shares can do substantially better. And defensive sectors do better, and that's certainly the case with Coca-Cola breaking out to new all-time highs and the relative strength of McDonald's and Kimberly-Clark and Johnson and Johnson. And these are all autonomies, and they benefit enormously from the rise of the global middle class, but that doesn't defray from the fact that they are in defensive sectors, that these are cash flow positive companies and with long histories of paying out increasing dividends. And in a time of uncertainty, then they are generally priced at a premium. Well, then the spread between the 10-year and the 2-year, which we refer to as the yield curve spread, is currently around 100 basis points, and that's narrower than it's been in quite some time. And generally, when it gets to zero and below zero, well, then we have a lead indicator for the next recession. So it's very unlikely we'll get a recession this year. But do we have the conditions that justify a breakout and a run on the upside? Well, the question is this a medium-term trend that is losing some momentum that could lead to a lengthier period of consolidation and then breaks out and runs higher for quite a bit longer? Or is this a 7-year trend that is about to accelerate higher? And that would represent an ending of potentially lengthy consequences. So, obviously, there's probably a lot of people would like to see it accelerate higher, and there will be shares that will accelerate higher. But by and large, I don't see that as a possibility beyond about 20% of a possibility at the current stage. I think there's an 80% chance that the market is going to continue to range, and that will allow valuations to improve, and we could be ranging for a while, and that would allow us to get over the hump of normalizing interest rates, and then it breaks out. And that would be very much in line with the theory that this is the beginning of a secular bull market, and secular is in very long term, that this could potentially be the first step above what has been a very lengthy base formation. So, this really is, in my view, only the first big consolidation after a very long ranging phase, and that's only really applicable to the US, because when you look at the Euro Stoxx index, it's been ranging for 16 years. The FTSE has been ranging for 16 years, and this continues to look like a big consolidation underneath the previous peak. Well, the FTSE is heavily weighted by resources and energy companies, so their relative strength is really quite good news. Well, what about Japan? Because they've been raising they've been raising the amount of money that they're pumping into the market, and the Nikkei was down about 1.25% in here today, and the yen has strengthened up to about 111.6, and that's the lower side of its range. It's the lower side of the dollar's range. It's the upper side of the yen's range. And this is where the yen needs to weaken from. And it's been my view for all of the last quarter that the yen is a barometer for risk because it's the carry trade currency of choice. When you've got the central bank on your side printing and really weighing on the currency, then you can borrow that currency and invest in higher yielding assets. And that some of that money would certainly went into the stock market. So the relative strength of the yen is a headwind for the Japanese stock market. And it's really worth keeping an eye on what the yen does, and particularly in the next week, because it's right at the upper side of its range. And if we start to see the yen breaking out, then that's likely to act as a catalyst for a risk-off type environment. And we are very much back in a risk-on, risk-off environment, and we haven't had that since 2011. And certainly right now we're on risk-on, but all it would really require is a large downward dynamic on the stock markets to confirm resistance in the region of the MA for European stocks and resistance in the region of the previous lower high for Wall Street. And then we'd move back into another volatile corrective phase. But and we'd be looking then to see, will the lows hold? So it's still a risky kind of environment. And that has helped precious metals. Because with so much debt at negative yields, and we're talking upwards of $6, $7 trillion, then the holding cost, which has always represented a negative interest rate for gold, is no longer such a concern. And in fact, gold could even be considered to have a positive carry relative to a lot of bonds right now. So gold had rallied very impressively up to $1,250, and it remains in this consolidation, which is above the 200-day moving average. What we are now seeing, though, is that because of that rally, gold is starting to be reassessed in the eyes of investors. So they're looking at gold and saying, well, it's probably worth having at least some of it in the portfolio. And what that does is it removes supply from the market. So that's allowing it to consolidate above the trend mean. And the break in the downtrend for ETF holdings of gold is also really quite positive. It suggests that a segment of the buying market that has been absent for 4 years is now back, and that's creating additional demand for the market. So then this continues to look like nothing more than a consolidation, and we would expect that it would eventually break out. Then silver, being high beta gold, has been consolidating in the region of the 200-day moving average, and relative to where the peak is, it's still at quite a depressed price level. And platinum and palladium are really quite very similar situations. And by and large, the bond market, this has been just an incredible rally in bond prices that has sent these yields to just incredible lows. But realistically, how much better can it get? And particularly if inflationary pressures are picking up rather than deteriorating. So what happens with commodities really is very important, because if commodities fall again from where they are right now, then that will wipe out a lot of the inflationary pressures that we have. And then government bond prices could get even stronger. So two things to watch from now, at least for the next month, are going to be the commodities and the yen. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I wish all the best to all of you.